Hey y'all, and welcome back to UpliftFit Nutrition Radio. I'm your host, Lacey Dunn, registered dietitian, here to spread the scientific knowledge in the world of fitness and nutrition. Today, we are going to talk about gut health as well as pregnancy nutrition. So get ready and let's jump right in. Hey guys, today I have Lindsay Matthews. She is an integrative nutrition health coach and a registered nurse, and I am so stoked to have her on. She's also a fellow Jesus lover. So thank you so much, Lindsay. I'm so happy to have you on here, and thank you for taking your time. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about who you are and what got you interested in your current field?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having me on, Lacey. I've been looking forward to this. What a cool chance to talk to your listeners. So, I'm a nurse and I'm also a health coach. I started out in nursing 8 years ago at the hospital setting. I worked in the neonatal ICU with the teeny tinies for a while, and then I worked with adult ICU or critical care patients. And I just really, I chose in that area because throughout nursing school, I just really had gained a passion for alternative health and wellness. And I felt great about emergent care things that the hospital can provide, you know, that conventional medicine is so strong in when we need life and death situations, when we need medications that can really just save people's lives. And so I started there because I felt like that would be the most in alignment with what I believed in, because a lot of just mainstream medical is not really kind of looking at the whole person, which I'd really become passionate about at the time. So anyway, I was there in the hospital and that was good. And I felt like that was a good season for me. I learned a lot, but I wasn't, it was very stressful, very challenging. And I'm so grateful for the men and women that stay there long term, particularly in the NICU with those teeny tiny babies. It's a very high stress, very emotional situation. Mm-hmm. But from there, I sought out an integrative practice or a functional medicine practice here in Birmingham, where I'm from, Birmingham, Alabama.
Holla, I was born there.
Oh, my family lives there. That. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yes. Yep. Birmingham. So I started working at a practice called the McMinn Clinic, and I've been there 5 years now. And we really, at the clinic, it's a functional medicine practice. So that's looking at the root cause of disease and helping people as well with optimizing their wellness. So we look at hormones, we look at gut health, we help people with autoimmune things, we see people that are just very healthy and just want to be healthier. And then we see people who've gone everywhere, talk to all these doctors and just aren't, conventional medicine isn't really breaking through for them in whatever their particular situation is. So they're looking for alternative answers. So I've been there for 5 years, but about 2 years ago, I trained to become a health coach. And that kind of evolved out of having been there and just as a nurse in my capacity there, seeing all these patients coming in and out, and a lot were able to adopt the things that we were talking about and put them into practice and then come back the following year or months later, depending on when their follow-up was. And, oh yes, this made a huge impact on my life and all those things. But then there were some people that would come back and just weren't able to make that transition from, I know the right things to do, but I'm just not applying it in my life, just kind of missing that transformation connection. So that's why I decided to become a health coach. And so now I kind of play both roles. I wear both hats there at the clinic and I really enjoy that. So that's where I'm at and it's a good place.
That's awesome. I love it. Now, because I know I do have a few people who have reached out to me who listen to this podcast and they do want to, and they're in the process of becoming a nurse. Do you have any, you know, I know this is not what our topic today is about, but do you have any tips for how they can, you know, go about finding what their passion is in the nursing industry?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great question. And nursing really is a great field to go into because you can evolve it in so many directions. There's just so many different populations that need nursing care. I think what really helped me early on is I did an internship program at the hospital I was working at Children's Hospital when I first graduated. And that allowed me to rotate around the hospital and get a feel for several different areas. And most hospitals provide an internship type situation. So that was great. And then let's see, of course, in school, you get lots of good clinical experience and just not being afraid to ask questions. And I wish one of the things I would have done going back to nursing school is I would have gone ahead and started working in a hospital setting or a clinic setting while I was going through school, mm-hmm. Just to be able to have context for learning. I think most of my learning came after nursing school was over. And it kind of gives you that context for like, oh, this patient, this was going on with them. And it helps the books come alive. My friends that worked in a hospital or worked in a clinic while they were going through school, I felt like they were so much more ahead. They knew the questions to ask. They knew how to kind of assimilate that information in. So I would say try to, you know, even if it's just volunteering or shadowing somebody that you know, like try to just get that time in so that you can have some actual hands-on experience so that you can contextualize the information. That would be a really big piece of advice that I'd share.
I love that. That's super important. And that's honestly something that I made happen in my undergrad experience in dietetics. And that mm-hmm. gave me the upper hand for, you know, my dietetic internship. I did I think it was like 5 months of working in a long-term acute care hospital. And doing a lot of tube feedings, a lot of parenteral and enteral nutrition. And I remember right. walking into my dietetic internship and knowing exactly how to do parenteral and enteral. And then the other interns kind of like not fully understanding. So it really did give me the upper hand. And then walking into my first clinical rotation, which I was thrown into, and day two, they were like, "Alrighty, you're seeing patients by yourself." And I was like, "Oh shit!"
Right.
I knew, and I was confident to, you know, be able to make that happen. So, hands down, you know, regardless of what you're doing, try and, you know, volunteer, get the experience. What's sad these days is, you know, companies that are hiring are like, you know, "We need you with X amount of experience." And then you're like,
right. How do I get experience?
Yeah. How do I get experience if I'm just coming out of my degree? But that's how you get experience. You do it before you have your degree.
Exactly. And even just don't underestimate the 1 or 2 days that you can sneak in with somebody. Don't underestimate that either.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Okay. So today we are going to talk about essentially 3 kind of different topics, guys. We are going to talk about gut health, a little couple gut health tidbits. We're going to talk about pregnancy nutrition, and then we're going to talk about Lindsay's husband's condition, which we'll go into. So the first thing I figured we could talk about in regards to gut health would be describing something that is kind of controversial, especially in the conventional medicine world, and that is leaky gut, aka intestinal permeability. So just to tell my listeners, intestinal permeability is essentially you have your gut lining, and with your intestine and the permeability of the membranes, you want, you know, the good, and you want the food particles to travel into the bloodstream. But with intestinal permeability, those tight junctions can actually kind of like open up. And then what happens is you have the good and the bad going into your bloodstream, and that is what is called leaky gut. So this can lead to symptoms like autoimmune conditions, chronic fatigue, inflammation, depression, or anxiety, and it can, you know, really contribute to a variety of issues. So what do you see in regards to who has intestinal permeability? And can you give my listeners a little bit of detail on what specifically can cause intestinal permeability or leaky gut?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's fabulous. Leaky gut. Wow. I mean, oh, this is such an important topic. So what can cause it? Certainly any kind of irritation inside the gut. So that could be things from a long-term lifestyle of a poor diet. A lot of people will also attribute eating GMOs to that as well, so genetically modified organisms. And let's see, other things that can cause leaky gut, gut dysbiosis, specifically something called SIBO or SIBO, depending on who you speak to as far as that's pronounced. So that's small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And it's just the idea of we have bacteria throughout our body, but heavily located in our large intestine is the bulk of our gut microbiome. And so when that large intestinal bacteria migrates upward due to a lot of different factors, whether that's motility issues or some kind of nervous system injury, a lot of different things that can cause that. But when those bacteria migrate upwards, they can cause overgrowth there in the small intestine, and then that can unleash that cascade of leaky gut, where that LPS or lipopolysaccharide, the bits of the bacteria are released through that, like you said, the lining of the gut. So a lot of different things that could cause leaky gut. Who has it? You're talking to a person who's very biased about the leaky gut issue. So I would really say that most of us, if are dealing with some level of leaky gut, whether we're aware of it or not. The people that I feel really, really struggle with it are the ones like you mentioned, autoimmune conditions, chronic fatigue syndrome, a lot of neurological type issues. But I mean, I can say that I've personally dealt with it. My husband's dealt with it. It's something that we commonly address for pretty much everybody walking in the doors at our practice. We try to make them aware of at the clinic. So, yeah, a lot of people. I'm sure you could add to that your wisdom on that, Lazy.
I see a lot of people who have thyroid disorders or fibromyalgia have leaky gut. And, mm-hmm. you know, the hard part about it is people don't realize that they have it, and they think it's just like, oh, I have, you know, I have digestion issues, I have bloating or mm-hmm. gas, and they don't, because mm-hmm. there's not really a way to specifically test it unless you're testing zonulin levels, or if you're going in and you're looking at the gut lining, and most doctors are not going to do a lot of tests. They're going to be like, oh, you have right. IBS, and send you into an umbrella symptom, mm-hmm. an umbrella diagnosis. So that's why I think it's very important to go to a functional medicine doctor, or go to a doctor that you know is going to treat and find the root cause versus just trying to mask a specific symptom.
Absolutely. And I think you also kind of, with talking about thyroid patients, it's not just somebody that has gut symptoms that we can suspect of leaky gut. You know, you might have perfectly normal motility and bowel movements and not have any kind of food sensitivity issues, but leaky gut could still be going on, because what happens is that with that permeability, when those particles come outside of the gut that are inside, we have our immune system is located, like 70 to 80% of your immune system is right there, right outside the gut. And that's how God designed it. Because when we eat food, it's taking this outside world in, and our immune system is that protection against the outside world, protects us and filters, say, what's friend, what's foe. So when those particles hit that outside of the lining, they move through and they hit that part of the immune system, which is called the gut-associated lymphoid tissue or GALT, it ignites that inflammatory cascade. And it might be that that inflammation through cytokines or other inflammatory molecules goes through the bloodstream and affects all different kinds of systems in your body. It might not just be gut related. And that's what can be confusing when you say, mm-hmm. oh, I have leaky gut. Well, I don't have any gut symptoms, or you suggest that to a patient and they're like, but I've never had any gut issues. I've always, you know, that's somebody else in my family. Why are you thinking that for me? But it's because that inflammation can be ignited elsewhere in the body, dependent on that individual's unique genetic issues and other things that are going on with them.
Yeah. Do you have hormone issues? Right. Do you have joint pain, muscle aches, hair loss, severe acne? So, you know, there's a host of things that can happen and it might not just be your gut. So what are ways that we can help to seal that gut lining, soothe it, and get you back to a more non-leaky gut?
Yes, absolutely. So probably one of my favorite things is bone broth. I love it because it's something that's just been around for forever and it's using food well. But bone broth, what's inside of those bones, those amino acids that get broken down, those are so healing to the gut lining and kind of help those tissues seal back up. Glutamine, it can be a really important supplement as well. But then you're right, the inflammatory component is probably one of the very first things that you need to address, calming down inflammation in the first place so that we can get that seal to work properly. And some of my favorite tools as far as inflammation goes are, well, one, an anti-inflammatory diet, where you're getting plenty of colorful fruits and vegetables in, where you're focusing on lower sugar, lower carb, low processed food, or no processed food, ideally. And for a lot of us, avoiding gluten or other kind of trigger or allergenic type foods. And then supplement-wise, my all-time favorite is going to be like DHA and EPA or fish oils are so, so good for calming inflammation.
I would so agree. And, you know, it's very controversial on the whole gluten thing, but if you have right. intestinal permeability, gluten so can increase zonulin levels. So I do suggest cutting out gluten, potentially cutting out grains until you are mm-hmm. able to, you know, get that inflammation down and get your gut healed. Bone broth, I would say a huge benefit to it would be on the glycine content. And then you can also increase glycine by having some collagen. I've looked into data into incorporating zinc carnosine for helping seal that gut lining. And then aloe, marshmallow root, ginger, these are things that can help soothe the gut. So you don't want to just focus on repairing, but you want to help soothe because that will help decrease your symptoms. Of course, we can go into other things. Say somebody has lack of digestive enzymes or, you know, they need a probiotic. Those would be, you know, case by case dependent because if you have like SIBO, you don't want to throw a probiotic in the mix.
Exactly. Definitely. I think that's a huge point.
So let's transition and talk about pregnancy nutrition.
Yeah. So I'm currently 27 weeks along Ew. With our first one. Mary Ellen is her name.
Oh my gosh. Adorable.
So we're really excited for Emmy to make her entrance at the end of June. But it's been really, really just wild to have talked about, oh, one day we'd love to have kiddos. And now it's like now. But as far as nutrition, like what I've really worked on doing is one, making sure I'm really, really adequately hydrated. That's been something that I've already had as part of my practice, but I have really, really pushed myself to make sure because during pregnancy, your fluid volume increases. You just have so much more blood and so much more going on with the blood in your body. So hydration is so, so important. So, and I don't know what you like to coach with your clients, Lacey, but I typically start people with at least half of their body weight in ounces daily. In water. And I love to add a little bit of Celtic sea salt to my water, just like a pinch, just to have that extra electrolyte component. And also just help with increasing the absorption of those electrolytes into my body. So the hydration has been definitely at the forefront. And then obviously taking a prenatal, and then I'm on very, very high dose fish oils, particularly DHA, because mm-hmm. that has been shown to really help with the neurological development and can even increase IQ significantly for the baby. So that's been really important. And I believe it's during the second trimester or second and third that really baby uses up all of mom's DHA stores in the body. So super important to get those fish oils in. And there are, for anybody that's a vegetarian, there are vegan sources of DHA. And of course, you can get your ALA as well, being the other omega-3 through things like nuts and seeds as well. But so supplement-wise, that's kind of my main thing. And then every day I do a big superfood smoothie, and I do all kinds of crazy powders in there, like reishi mushroom being one of my favorite ones, which has been one of the most well-studied herbs in the whole world, coming to us from Chinese medicine. So that's in there. And I'm also using eucomia as well. But I would, of course, tell your listeners that they should speak with their own healthcare practitioner about what's appropriate for them before they just add on these things. But that's kind of a indoor into my smoothie world. Those are a few things, but lots of good fat, lots of good protein. I have, up to my pregnancy, been a vegetarian, but I have added a little bit of wild-caught salmon into my diet since getting pregnant, and that's mainly just to make sure that I'm at least getting anywhere from 50 to 70 grams of protein a day for me, for my body, during pregnancy. So that's been really important. And just getting lots of colorful fruits and veggies in. I've been really hitting the smoothies at night lately, just to kind of try to throw in lots of extra spinach and kale and berries and ramp up on that. I've still stayed, and this is probably a more controversial topic, but I've stayed more lower carb throughout my pregnancy. And that's been kind of an evolution that my husband and I have done over the past 2 years with his illness, is being more low carb, just for leaky gut reasons, for inflammation reasons. And so, you know, there's been times when I've gone into my visits where they've tested my urine for ketones, and I have shown some ketones. So I've tried to be a little bit conscious about that, but just making sure that I have a good balance of fruits and vegetables and protein and lots of good fat. So that's a mouthful there. I don't know if I hit the what you were looking for.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story, because it definitely, it gives me tidbits to go off of that are super important for anybody who's looking to get pregnant or have an optimal pregnancy and a healthy baby. And, you know, something that really stood out was you talking about you were vegetarian and you added some seafood. Very important to these ladies who want to be pregnant or are pregnant. There are several studies that show that mothers in their pregnancy who are vegan or vegetarian, their babies can have low birth weights or birth defects. And this is because they are not getting the vitamins and minerals that they need through the vegan or the vegetarian diet. And I think this is largely because a lot of people who are vegan or vegetarian, you know, they lack, you know, not that they lack the education during their pregnancy, but it's just harder to get in what you need. You know, vegan and vegetarian sources of DHA and EPA are not really absorbed well in our bodies. So right. It's very important if you are pregnant or thinking about being pregnant, you're vegetarian or vegan, that you are going to see a fertility nutritionist or registered dietitian, and you are providing your body with what it needs for your pregnancy. So preconception, I like to say, really make sure that you're focusing on folate, iron, B12 levels, iodine, choline, a good calcium. So good choline would be things like eggs. Eggs are excellent for increasing choline levels. It's been shown that maternal deficiencies of choline can interfere with fetal brain development. And then make sure you have, of course, optimal vitamin D and iron, iodide, things like that. Folate, yeah. Definitely I suggest supplementing with 400 UGs. I never know how to exactly say that, but 400 UGs a day of folic acid from fortified foods or dietary supplements, in addition to 200 in food. I do like to suggest people stick or try to use folate, methylfolate, because that is more readily absorbed in your body. And people who have the MTHFR enzyme, the MTHFR, not enzyme, but
Mutation.
They are right mm-hmm. there. They are not able to absorb and use folic acid. So using methylfolate is beneficial. I think it's also important to note, and sorry that I'm rambling, but I just want to make sure that I cover this because people are always confused. First trimester, the goal is not to increase your food and gain weight.
Correct.
They're like, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant, so I can eat everything. And I'm like, no. You don't want to gain a bunch of weight for no reason right now. Hold off. Slow. You don't have to increase your calorie needs your first trimester, people. Your second trimester and your third trimester, that's when you increase second trimester by about 340 calories and about 450 for your third trimester. Now keep in
mind, which is really not much.
Exactly. That's like an extra snack, big snack or meal.
It really is.
So,
which is really hard socially because everybody's like, oh, you should have more because you're pregnant. You're eating for two. It's very culturally accepted that you should eat a lot more, or that, okay, you're not eating, you need to eat. You know, it just food appears out of nowhere. So, you're absolutely right, Lacey.
Now, what are things that people can expect when they hit that pregnancy?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been super, super blessed. I really only was nauseated for like a week when we first found out we were pregnant. And it was just like, my husband, he loves to make eggs a little bit more on the raw side, and I like them extra cooked. And I was just like, oh, just don't fix the eggs. Just don't do it, you know? So that was not bad. Some people really do deal with a lot of nausea. I think one of the big things that's underlying a lot of those pregnancy symptoms for women is your autonomic nervous system shifts. And the autonomic nervous system is what regulates a lot of what's going on in your body automatically. Blood pressure, breathing, heart rate, digestion, all of these things. And so it's just your body's trying to make this accommodation for growing another being. And so you have these natural fluctuations. But what's really interesting is that before we got pregnant, and this is all just a God thing, and I love that this is a faith podcast, so I feel open to share this.
Share it, girlfriend.
But we were not trying to get pregnant at this time because my husband has been battling a chronic illness with his autonomic nervous system, basically a dysfunction of it. And so all of the protocols that God helped us find along the way, we have since then understood actually allowed us to become pregnant when we did not realize that we probably had some underlying fertility issues going on, even though we were both what we thought very healthy individuals beforehand, one of those things being MTHFR that you mentioned previously. So, but anyway, your autonomic nervous system. So we did a lot of things to address Tyler, my husband's autonomic nervous system dysfunction, like addressing SIBO and inflammation, leaky gut issues. And through doing that, I, of course, did whatever he was doing. And we feel like that really regulated my autonomic nervous system. And I think that's what really has made this pregnancy such a skate for me, like just really skating through it, not having the typical, I really haven't even been tired, haven't been nauseated except for that 1 week. I've just had very minimal symptoms at all, felt fantastic. And I think a lot of it has to do with where your autonomic nervous system is at. Is it dealing with some inflammation underlying it before the pregnancy? Is it dealing with any of those issues ahead of time?
Yeah, that's super important. And I think it's very important that you mentioned your husband as well, because women get so caught up in it's all of their fertility. It's their issue. You know, they're the root problem. But, you know, guys, their sperm quality and their fertility matters too.
Yes, absolutely. And so, absolutely.
So let's, I just want to cover just a few things to avoid during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So do you want to start with that, or do you want me to start?
Sure. So you definitely have to look up. We went through all of our typical herbs and supplements that we would normally take without thinking about it. So there were several things that I needed to back off on. And even some things that you can have during the second and third trimester, but you shouldn't have during the first trimester, such as like raspberry leaf tea, something that you really could even be controversial in second and third trimester. So there's just like some things that you just kind of need to go through your normal routine and look at those supplements. But other things to avoid, let's see. Of course, the obvious, like just continuing to work out, not avoiding that, but as you get bigger, trying to be conscious of the appropriate exercises to do so as not to cause issues with that diastasis type deal where your abs separate. And that's one where you really kind of, I've consulted some physical therapists and other people as far as appropriate exercises, because there's a lot of information online about do this, don't do that. And it's really best just to probably seek out a specialist mm-hmm. so that you make sure you're doing the right things for your body too. It's my understanding that everybody's body's made a little differently. So there could be some exercises that would be appropriate for me and not appropriate for the next pregnant mama, or vice versa. So, I think that's really important. And then just giving yourself grace to not be go, go, go all the time, but just really actually sit back and marvel at what God's doing at this creation, and just be amazed and be still.
And let your husband do the dishes here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a partnership, and you need to do that now too, especially because once baby comes, it's a family deal, and you got to all work together. Yes.
So I think it's very important to remember to rest. I like to say rest and digest, because you need rest to be able to digest, but rest, mm-hmm. rest, sloth, recover. And then making sure in your pregnancy to avoid high mercury foods, so like tilefish, shark, swordfish, king mackerel. And try and keep a Borka tuna limited as well. Make sure you are not consuming raw juices, milks, or cheeses ever, please, Lord. Alcohol, of course, and try and limit caffeine that's over 200 milligrams per day. That's controversial. Some people say no caffeine whatsoever, but I have seen some data to where, you know, people are okay doing like a cup of coffee a day. So those are additional things to avoid, of course, other than the supplements. And also, I think it's very, very important that I mention, do not have too much vitamin A. So look at your vitamins, vitamin and mineral supplements, because too much vitamin A is teratogenic and it can lead to cranial facial malformations and abnormalities that we do not want.
For sure. Absolutely. And I loved earlier too that you really mentioned the methylated folate and the methylated B vitamins. And I think that kind of going back to that whole vegetarian vegan connection, that's a lot of times what's missing for people that live that lifestyle like I did, is we're not getting those methylated Bs in. Mm-hmm. And that's so important. I don't know what the statistic current one is now as far as how many people have MTHFR, but I think it's at least 40% of the population have some form of the mutation. And so that's where that becomes particularly important, to have that methylated form in. There's a lot of great prenatals now that are made with methyl B vitamins. And beets, of course, are a natural source of methyl groups too. So,
gotta love beets. I actually really like them in a salad. They're really good.
Yes, I love to roast those suckers or juice them as well.
Great option. Okay, let's shift gears and let's talk about something that I have no clue about, and that is your husband's condition, dysautonomia, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
You did so great. I'm going to let you take the reins. Tell me what this is, because I have zero clue.
Yeah, absolutely. So dysautonomia affects about 70 million people worldwide, actually. And there's lots of different types of dysautonomia, but basically it's a dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system. So again, that autonomic nervous system, you have your central nervous system and you have your peripheral nervous system. And as part of your peripheral nervous system, I believe it is, the autonomics come into play, and they're what regulate everything that's going on automatically in your body, the breathing, the blood pressure, the heart rate, the digestion, a lot of those things that we don't have to think about. It also is what regulates that parasympathetic and sympathetic response, the fight, flight, and the rest and digest response. So A lot of things. And which is what's so interesting about dysautonomia is that most people that have it, it takes about 5 to 6 years statistically before they're diagnosed. Typically what happens is it gets diagnosed as a psychiatric issue because a lot of times one of the common symptoms is panic attacks or anxiety or depression. But really what's underlying all that is autonomic issues, is this dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system. So, for Tyler, and you've kind of heard my story now. We've been married for 8 years. I've been a nurse. He's in nutrition. So health has been our lifestyle, very much so. So when he got sick 2 years ago, it really came out of nowhere. And now we have an understanding that it was multiple root factors that contributed to it. And just to kind of make the story not too long, he had eczema his whole life. That even though no matter what dietary changes we made, the eczema still kind of persisted. It improved a lot with dietary changes, but eczema still remains. So that's a skin condition. So he had that, which is basically an inflammatory condition going on for his whole life. He's had a lot of dental issues genetically. His family did not give him the best genes there. So just some kind of internal oral infections that have been ongoing that we've addressed along the way, but also have been traumatic. And then just different other inflammatory injuries that have happened along the way. He had malaria in college when he was in Haiti working at a bowel nutrition clinic. And then any kind of stressful event as well. So there's this idea called multiple traumatic brain injuries. And it's the idea that all of these things added together create this synergistic insult to your nervous system. And it hits a threshold where it can no longer recover. And along the way, you've had these insults happen. And there's been like little bits of small signs of dis-ease or disease going along the way. But in general, you're healthy, healthy, healthy. And then you hit a wall. And it's this last straw that breaks the camel's back, this last inflammatory event, which for Tyler was this major stressor event with his mom being in the hospital. And then your nervous system just breaks and it can no longer compensate anymore. So for him, he had chronic fatigue. He had depression. He had panic attacks. He lost 25 pounds in a month with diarrhea. And he really wasn't able to leave the house for about 6 months. He had to lay flat because if he stood up, he'd pass out.
Oh my gosh.
Brain fog, where we'd be in the middle of a conversation and he'd look at me and he'd say, I don't remember what we're talking about. And this is a 29-year-old man, you know, where we could say brain fog might be normal, quote unquote, for somebody in their 60s or 70s, but not for a 29-year-old guy. So it was absolutely brought us to our knees. And God was so faithful, though. He met us in that place. And we have a lot of tools between him and I. Working at a functional medicine practice, we were doing all the things that we knew to do, but just didn't really understand exactly what was going on, that this was dysautonomia and why it was affecting him. So it took months to get that diagnosis. But again, that was God's leading, because most people it's 5 to 6 years, because we went to all the doctors, including my functional medicine doctor, and we had all kinds of workups and the basic inflammatory workups that you can do at a functional medicine practice. We didn't end up doing the leaky gut one, which we should have early on, but we did like CRP, which is C-reactive protein. We looked at his ESR. We looked at things like his blood sugar and just all these other looks at inflammation, and all of them looked good. So it was like, your inflammation's not high, but what was really going on is it's neuroinflammation. So that kind of circles back to that whole leaky gut conversation that we had in the beginning. And for him, it was SIBO. And so while he didn't have any of these normal markers for inflammation, you know, so all of our regular doctors are like, oh, he's fine. He's just stressed out. Here's some Klonopin. Here's some Lexapro, that kind of thing. that it was really a neurological inflammation that was at the root cause of what was going on. So, but prayer and fasting really, really did it. We just again and again came to our knees before the Lord and we're like, God, just bring us to the answers. Help us know what we need to do. We went through, we did all kinds of crazy things from an elemental diet, which was an all liquid diet, all that he could tolerate, to a low histamine diet, because we were trying to figure out why his immune system was just, you know, he just sneezed for like an hour at a time. Like, why, what is happening with that? So we did the low histamine diet. But then eventually we landed and found a functional medicine doctor who focuses on the autonomic nervous system. And we got this diagnosis of dysautonomia and were able to really start treating the inflammation in his nervous system. And that's really when we started to see recovery for him. And out of God's grace, that the protocols that we did for that reduced inflammation in my body as well. And we've since found some genetic markers in my body as well, kind of going back to that fertility thing that we realized allowed us to become pregnant when, again, we didn't even know that that was probably an issue before. So God used that hard, hard time when just, I mean, literally there were times when we thought he was dying. We thought, well, let's get life insurance and call and make all the phone calls we need to call. But God used that to bring this new life into our life. And so now we actually just launched an online course talking about his recovery, and we're trying to get that information out to other people because we think it's so impactful, and not just for people that have dysautonomia with a diagnosis of it, but what it's really looking at is just lowering inflammation throughout the body and just allowing your body to operate how it really should. And so that's a little bit of the story.
Wow, that's just so much. Goodness, I'm so glad you guys were able to diagnose, figure out ways to help. And, you know, I think what's really important, and I'm glad you mentioned it, is prayer. The power of prayer is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. God just does magic and miracles. And it's very important that we don't try and, you know, fix things ourselves and think that everything is in our hands, because it's not. It's in His hands. And we need Absolutely. To give the faith and give the anxiety and the worry to Him.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of that is sometimes just waiting on His timing too. I think about if we'd gotten that answer early on and quickly, would we have gone to all the lengths and done all the things that we did or that God led us to do that healed my body as well? I don't think we would have if we'd have gotten this answer early. And that was, you know, it wasn't like God saying no or not answering. It was God answering in the appropriate way. So His timing is so, so beautiful. And I think it's just so good to hear stories of people, you know, and that's why I want to share this story, just because it builds our faith and just helps us see that how God is truly moving in the world. And He really does respond to prayer, and our bodies also are, the world is designed to respond to faith. I really believe that. And so, and that was a huge part of Tyler's recovery as well, was just speaking good things. We did that intentionally every day. We talk about, hey, what was good today? It would be really easy. And I would say this to somebody out there, if you have a friend that has a chronic illness, instead of like, how are you doing? If you really, really know them well, a lot of times that seems like a good answer, but most of the time they're just feeling like crap and it just helps them focus on where they're feeling like crap or where they're not doing well, but focusing on, hey, what's going good? What's God doing? Like, how can I pray for you? Just trying to do those positive things, because there's a huge mind-body connection as well. And your brain learns, it learns this trained response to stressors. So, and it's not like you have a weak mind. It's just once you start down this train of negativity, your brain literally, it's like a roller coaster, and it just, or a rut, and it gets used to going down that rut. And even if you're a strong person mentally, your mind just goes on autopilot subconsciously. And so really consciously retraining your mind. And that's what the scriptures tell us, you know, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And I think that I have to mention that because that's such a huge part in health in general, whether you're ill or very vibrant.
Oh, yeah. The power of the mind is phenomenal. You are, if you can master your own mind, if you can master, you know, thinking positively or negatively, that is like a superpower.
Yes.
And I think people, you know, they underestimate the power of being able to focus on, you know, your blessings, being grateful versus looking at something and being like, oh, one thing is going wrong, so everything else is going to go wrong. So it really is, you know, it takes habits. It takes forcing yourself to really, you know, work on your mindset every single day. But once you do, and once you always, you know, cultivate that positivity and shift your mind towards that, then it really can be a substantial impact in your life.
Yes, agreed.
So I just wanted to thank you so much for your time. I won't take any more of it. But I want to make sure my listeners know where to find you, where they can follow you, and if they want to have your help at the clinic, where they can do that as well.
Yeah, thanks so much. Absolutely. So we will have my husband and I, if you're interested in the dysautonomia recovery piece, our website will be going up this weekend. We had a soft launch last weekend, so it's officially going to be dysautonomiarecovery.com. So you can find us there. You can find me personally, Lindsay Matthews, at the McMinn Clinic in Birmingham, Alabama. My email there is lindsay@mcminnclinic.com. We also have a podcast as well, functionalmedicinepodcast.com. So a couple different places you can track me down. And I'd love to hear from anybody that's interested in care.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I'll make sure that I link all that in the description below of this podcast. And I just have one last question for you.
Yeah.
And that is, what is your biggest tip for anybody who wants to have a healthy lifestyle?
Oh,
I know,
man.
It's hard. So you can take your time.
Gosh. Well, you know, I really think it comes back to this whole faith and spirituality component of this body, mind, spirit connection. And just that knowing that God designed your body without flaw. And so one, like getting still, listening to your body, your bio individually unique. So what works for one person won't work for everybody. So learning to know this beautiful design of your body that God made it, and being still and listening to that, but also being still and listening to Him and asking God, hey, what do I need to do? Asking Him for the wisdom, and He will direct and bring the resources into your life that you need. I've personally seen that. And I think when we come to that place of alignment, it really helps with this whole stress deal that most of us here in the U.S. are dealing with. It's probably one of our biggest health problems ever, is that stress connection. So I think when we come back to that place of peace, of just seeking God, He's the healer, He designed these temples, coming back to that place and listening and knowing that your body's unique, and just slowing down and figuring out what that is. But, I want to say 1,000 things, like eat real food, you know, sleep, just a million things. But I think the starting place is just that foundation of rest in God and His design for you.
Love it. Love it. Can't say I don't agree. So thank you again so much for your time. To my listeners, make sure you go and you reach out to her if you need help, or you just want to follow her, make sure you do that. And thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. Just want to mention, please leave a review, subscribe to this podcast. That way you can stay on top of the episodes and also help to grow this podcast so that more people can find it and more people can learn. And that's about it. So thank you so much, Lindsay, for your time. And I hope you have a fabulous rest of your day.
Thank you.